Want to be confident when talking about yourself and explaining what you do? Join my free 21-day confidence building course. You'll learn how to construct a personal elevator pitch, learn how to not be awkward in social situations, how to have awesome conversations, among other important skills to help you crush life. Best of all, it's free. Sign up now at freeconfidencecourse.com. From The C Method, my name is Christina Canters, and this is Stand Out, Get Noticed, the podcast that helps you communicate with confidence and clarity so you can get what you want in business and in life. To subscribe to the show and download the back catalogue, go to thecmethod.com/podcast. Hi there, Rockstar. Welcome to episode 17. I'm your host, Christina Canters, and I'm very excited for this episode. Now, my busking challenge has come to a close for the moment, and for the next few episodes, I want to focus on something that is at the core of what I teach, which is public speaking. Now, the point of encouraging you to do your own comfort challenges, like me with the busking, for example, is to help you build your confidence in yourself, which is a big part of being effective as a speaker. So, to kick off this series of episodes on public speaking, I'm very excited to be chatting with speech and presentation coach and speaker, Sally Coring-Zimney. Sally is passionate about helping people create speeches and presentations that move others. Her mission is to break down the fourth wall that exists between a speaker and their audience in order to help them connect and effectively get their message across. Don't know what the fourth wall is? Don't worry about that. We will talk about it. You'll also discover what Sally does to connect with her audience, how to tell a really simple story to engage others, even if you're presenting boring data. Believe me, you can totally do it. Sally also has a podcast. It's called This Moved Me, which you can find at thismovedme.com. She's just wrapped up season one and she's taking a little break until September, but you should definitely check out that first season to learn all about how to deliver a powerful speech that moves people. Now, we mentioned a few links in this episode, and I'll pop everything that we talk about at thecmethod.com/Sally. It was so much fun having Sally on the show, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So without further ado, let's get moving with Sally Coring-Zimney.
I was listening to your busking show today. I think I was listening to number two and just getting the biggest kick out of it. What a fun adventure you're on.
Yeah, that was fun. I went busking on Saturday and I released that episode today, and that was so fun. It was really fun. It actually was not as scary as I thought it would be.
Yeah. I mean, for you, I would think that's kind of right up your alley, isn't it?
Well, 6 months ago, I would not have even considered doing this at all.
Really?
Yeah. It scared the crap out of me. Totally. And I went, I sort of had this, because you have to get a permit to do it in Australia, well, in Melbourne anyway. So I was all gung-ho and I was like, yeah, I'm going to get the permit. So I went and got the permit, and then when I actually thought about the reality of going and singing to people on the street, I was like, oh no, that's just horrible. But then I told everyone I was doing it. So I was like, you know, I have to. And the fact that it scared me meant that I had to do it. So
totally.
Yeah. So we did it and it wasn't even that bad.
Well, and given everything that you talk about and your whole mission, yeah, what you've got to do, it scares you and put yourself out there. So good for you.
Totally. You do coaching and you actually help people create their messages, and you help create presentations as well. What's the main thing that you do?
Well, I would say the biggest piece of the pie is really the coaching aspect. So working with individuals and companies, organizations who are looking to develop a presentation of some kind. Sometimes it's an event, a fundraising event. Sometimes it's people who are working on getting their book out, like a book launch, and helping them with their messages. Sometimes I'm working with an organization as they're refining their messaging, but it's all around really how you present yourself and creating an experience that moves people. That's really my mission, is helping you move your audience and breaking down that fourth wall that so often exists between a speaker and her audience. And that's my mission, is to really break down that wall and to help.
What do you mean by the fourth wall?
Okay, well, I have a theater background. So
Okay.
that's a theater term. The fourth wall is, the pretend wall. If you're on stage and you're on set and you've got three walls, right? And the fourth wall is a pretend wall that you pretend there's not an audience there most of the time, unless.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So that fourth wall is between you and the audience. And as a theater person, sometimes that wall exists intentionally. You're having a scene with somebody, but you're almost not aware that the audience is there. Of course you are, but that has nothing to do with what you're doing on stage. And as a speaker, my goal is really to break down that wall so that there's a connection between you and the audience, because I think that is really what an audience yearns for, to feel a part of it and to not feel a distance, but to feel like the person up there. Oh, I get a sense of who you are, and I feel connected to you, and I'm interested in what you're saying. And so what I've always told speakers is, it's your job as a speaker to go out to the audience. And I'm not talking literally here, but to go out and bring them to you. It is not their job to come to you. You have to go to them and bring them to where you're at. So I hope, I think that's my mission, really, when I'm working with speakers and I'm coaching them, is to help develop an experience that really moves their audience. Because that's of course what we're trying to do. As communicators and speakers, is to do something with our words. We want it to impact people. So I work with all kinds of different people who are really doing what I would call impact work. So it's a wide range, Fortune 500 companies, but also nonprofits and individuals who have their own passionate message, their mission that they're trying to bring to the world. So I love the variety, and I working with people. So coaching is a total passion of mine. Really enjoy it.
So how do they find you?
Well, at this point, it has really just grown organically. So about 15 years ago, I started working for an organization called Youth Frontiers, and they do day-long programming in schools, and it's this very experiential retreat experience. It's an amazing day, and it's about changing the climate of a school. So we talk about courage and kindness and respect, and it's a very cool experience. But a big element of these retreats is speaking. So I was hired on to be one of the staff out on retreats, and really quickly discovered that they needed a coach for their speakers. They didn't have one, and I had done that. In the past, I'd worked with speech teams in high school and had done this very casually as the opportunities arose. But this became my role really quickly, because it was something that I was passionate about and had a vision for. So I was working with 15 plus speakers a year who were giving anywhere between 2 and 12 talks throughout the year. So I got, it's an amazing training ground in terms of who I was working with, and this wide array of people, and developing messages, and how do you give feedback in a thoughtful way. And I learned a ton. And as I did that work, and as that work continued to evolve, all these opportunities and networking things just came to me. And so as I had kids, I have three kids, and as the little people became a part of my life, I started dialing back my work at Youth Frontiers and building this consulting work, because I was intrigued by it, interested in it, loved it, and gave me also some flexibility, which is great.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I've been doing, and now it's my full-time gig.
That's awesome. With something like speaking and communication skills, I find that people often don't think that they can actually get better at that. And they tend to just accept that, oh, I just suck at public speaking. And it's only when,
you know, I say to people, I help people with their public speaking. They go, oh, you know, I could use that help. Or like, oh man, everyone needs that. So I think it's a case of like people are aware of a problem, but they're not aware of a solution. Mm-hmm. And I think,
you know, unfortunately, I think, you know, some of the clients I work with, I have been handed to them. You know, this is not necessarily what they wanted. And relationships are really, really hard. And coaching it's a relationship. And it's about trust and it's about connection. And do they like me? Do we have a natural affinity for each other? And, you know, it's really about relationship. And so if their boss, for instance, has said, you know, we really want you to work on this, I have to spend a lot of time building trust and helping them understand that I'm not going to turn them into something that they're not, and that this is something that people can improve upon if they're willing to take a little risk and to let somebody in to help them with this, because it's a vulnerable thing that we're asking people to do. You know,
is there a way that you're able to actually show people that they can improve, like in a short period of time, so it gives them that little bit of motivation to keep going?
Mm-hmm. Well, the best thing is diving into delivery. And because it's such a tangible, workable thing, you know, you're like molding the person right in front of you. And that is the thing that everybody hates to do. You know, I can't tell you how many times we get stuck in content because you can never be done with content building and fussing and, you know, finessing. It's just hours and hours and hours working on content. But really, there's part of people that in the back of their heads, they're avoiding the getting up on their feet part. And so I try and frame it up as, okay, we're going to do a stumble through is what I call it. And you're going to stumble, you're going to fall on your face. That's just the deal. Let's just acknowledge that this is really uncomfortable. What an awkward thing we have here. It's just me sitting out here, but we're pretending this is an audience of 100 people. And we're pretending like this is weird. And let's just joke about that and laugh about it and acknowledge it. But what I love about a stumble through is it just gives permission to people to fall on their face. And then I help them get back up and say, okay, let's try that again. And this time I want you to, instead of in your story using third person language, try it again using first person language so that I feel like I'm actually in the story with you. And so giving them one little thing to work on, and they try it out, and it's not necessarily like magical transformation, but you start to see little shifts and it feels different. You say, you know, was that different for you? And here's what I saw, that I felt so much more connected to what you're saying, and let's try it again like this. So it's, especially as a theater background, it's my chance to kind of be director a little bit and to think about, okay, what does this person need? What kind of feedback would help this person? And then it's my job as a coach to really think strategically about what can I say to this person right now that would help move the needle a little bit so that they start to experience some success and they start seeing those stepping stones into the next, you know, doorway of like, oh, okay, yes, I got it. A little aha moment that kicks them off to the next bit.
Yeah, that's great. And that's so rewarding too as a coach to be able to see that. And see that and go, oh, it's working.
Oh, it's huge. But love it.
How often do you get to speak to an audience and have an opportunity to move them?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's totally random at this point. It hasn't been my main focus for so long. And that was what I did forever. It was like, I was out there speaking. I was speaking, you know, did 200 talks a year kind of thing. And now, so much of my effort is really coaching that I haven't done as much of that lately. And I love it. I probably give 10 to 15 talks a year. And that's way, you know, it's underutilizing my skills, really. It's probably I created the podcast because I was like, I am a communicator. Like, I should be out there doing this too.
Yeah.
Coaching is really part of what I do. And I do really love it. But I'm also, you know, I was an actor and, you know, I've been a communicator myself for so long. And so I really want to hold both of those things. So recently I just developed this webinar about how to move your audience. And I'm working with an organization and essentially trying this on. It's a workshop. It's really a training that I would do on site. And they couldn't fly me out because it's expensive. And they were like, "Will you try this as a webinar?" I was like, "Sure, I'll give that a go." I'm not totally sold that public speaking training can be done via webinar, but I'm trying. I'm giving it a go.
I've done that once before.
Have you?
Yeah, I did it for a university in when I was in Europe and there in Melbourne, and I did a little webinar on how to create an elevator pitch, and that was fun. But it's hard because you can't see the reactions of the students
Oh my.
very well. Like you just I mean you mentioned like the fourth wall. This is like the fifth wall. You know, it's like literally a screen there. So trying to bust through that is really
It's
difficult.
really, really
In terms,
hard.
yeah. In terms of actually breaking down this fourth wall that you talk about, what are the some of the things that you do to connect with your audience and stand out?
Well, I always, before a talk, I always take time to actually go out and mingle in the audience, to connect with
Oh, I love that.
people and say hello and how you doing. And I become a human to them then. And already I just want them to know, like, I'm not just the person up on stage. I'm like a real human and I want to learn about them. It really warms up the audience. For me, I really need that. I need to know, like, I've made some connections with some people, so it's not just an audience full of strangers. So that is a really big thing for me, and I tell that to all of my speakers. If you can, take some time, like, get out there, connect with them so they can get to know you as a human just a little bit.
It helps reduce your nerves too,
Yeah.
I find.
Gosh, it's
Cuz when you view the audience as like this massive crowd, you're like, "Oh my God." But then when you go out and you're like, "Hi, what's your name?" and you actually meet the individuals, they become more human to you too.
Totally. Yeah. And then laughter, I think, is so important. And you have to find your own way to create laughter. You have to, like, not everybody's a joke teller, and that's totally fine. And I'm not a joke teller, but I am sort of a, like, I like to play a, like, stupid game at the beginning of my talks.
Oh, what do you do?
I play this. It totally depends on the size of the audience and the space and how everything is configured. But one of my favorite things to do is this game called the finger pull. Finger
As in,
pull.
okay, sorry, I won't interrupt, keep going.
It's a farting game. It's not a farting game. But it's such a stupid game, and it's so great because it's low risk. It doesn't freak people out too much, because every time if you'd be like, "We're going to play a mixer," the whole, like, collective groans from the audience. This is just stand up, stand shoulder to shoulder with the people next to you, and then put your right pointer finger in the air, and then hold your left palm out. And what you're going to do is you're going to put your right pointer finger into the palm of the person to your right. And so the person to your left has their right pointer finger in your palm. And then on the count of three, you're going to simultaneously try and grab the person's finger to your left and not let the person to your right grab yours. I don't know if you can,
Hang on, say that again.
without doing it. You're going to simultaneously, on the count of three, try and grab the person's finger to your left
All right, and then
not let
move
the
your other
person
finger.
to your right grab yours.
And then what happens?
And then everybody laughs.
I
It's just a silly, stupid thing. So you say 1, 2, 3, and everyone goes, "Ah, oh, I got it. Oh, no." Do it again. And the second time you don't say the number three, and everybody does it, and you call them cheaters, and they laugh. And it's just silly and dumb. And it's one of those things too that just warms up the room and says, "Okay,
Yeah.
this is not, I'm not going to just talk at you for 20 minutes here, 40 minutes. I want this to be sort of a fun experience." And then, of course, the ultimate way to break down that fourth wall is through storytelling. And it is the kind of essential piece in any talk. I don't care who you are, if you're giving a business talk and you're giving a pitch, or if you're telling your own story and it's really about you. Story is how we reach out to people, and they kind of commune with you as the speaker and have that experience where They are understanding what you're saying in a completely different way. It's a magical tool, I think.
I think it is too. And I think it's so underutilized. And I think that people feel like when they're giving a business talk or something, they have to just throw all this information at the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think sometimes you'll see they'll think of something and then they'll just put in a story and then all of a sudden it becomes so much more engaging. And I'm thinking, why did you not start with that?
Mm-hmm.
I think very few people actually deliberately put them in there as a way to open.
Mm-hmm.
So what's an example? I know it's obviously it's like really personal to each person,
mm-hmm.
but what's an example of how someone could incorporate a story to really make their opening stand out?
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a kind of story called your origin story. And that is
okay.
The story that got you to this moment. So if your talk is about, for instance, we'll just give my webinar, for example. My webinar is about moving your audience. Okay, so there is an origin story about this. What was the moment when I realized how important it is to move your audience, or when I was moved and I thought, okay, wow, this is really an essential moment. And you tell that story. And so if you're like heading up an organization and you are making a fundraising pitch, your origin story is where did this organization come from? Why does it exist? And there's always a story behind these essential, critical, beautiful things that we're trying to do. There's always a story there. And so your job as a speaker is to drill down to that moment and crystallize it as best you can so that we really get to the why really, really quickly and say, okay, I totally get why this is important. And because story is this wonderful, you know, people's defenses go down when they hear a story, and there's all kinds of wonderful things that happen in the brain, which is why stories are so effective. And so without even trying that hard, you've brought them into this, why this is important, and they're with you then, you know? So origin story, I think, is everybody should know their origin story. Like why you're doing what you're doing. Like Christina Cantor's, you have an origin story as to why you're talking about standing up and getting noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I even know it, you know, and because you should be saying it a lot. And you don't say there was some concern. Sometimes I work with an organization and they're like, will you tell the story? We tell the story, you know, we've told it before. I'm like, yes, because it's your origin story and you're going to tell it again. And that's okay. You want to make sure that it doesn't come out of your mouth in the exact same way every time. So it becomes rote and people stop listening to what you're saying, but it's your why. It's your why moment. So yes, you're going to say it again and again and again. It's why you're doing what you're doing. So the origin story, I feel like, is the key one.
What about for someone who is working for a company and they've been asked to present some really boring data or, you know, an update on where the team is at with that particular project?
Mm-hmm.
Can they use an origin story in that circumstance as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what I would say is what's the why for that presentation? You know, if it's we want to share the data of last quarter's earnings, what's the why there?
It can be a bit of a struggle, but I guess, yeah, there's always a way figure it out. We could do the story like, well, so-and-so walked up to my desk the other day and asked if how we were going, and I said this, and then they said that.
Right. But I could also see, whether – maybe an origin story doesn't work in every single scenario. I think you might have got me on that one. But I'm thinking, like, what does your audience, you know, the people keep saying, well, like, you know, think of your audience and keep your audience in mind. No, really, like, what do they want to hear about? And what do they don't, what do they not hear about? And so acknowledging all of the baggage that people come in the room with when you're getting up to do an earnings presentation, like get that. My brother, who's this financial guru, He's incredibly bright, and he leads this huge organization. Well, he had to do this big financial presentation to other leaders in the company, and he's the finance guy. So people have such low expectations for people in finance. And he, like, as a joke, just to warm everybody up and to show them that he does things a little bit differently, he like pulled out glasses and said, "Okay, it's time for the financial, blah blah blah." Silly with it, and it was this wonderful thing, and everyone was like, "Yay!" Because it was like him acknowledging, "Now here's the boring part," and he just gave them a gift, because otherwise their whole thinking was, "This is going to be brutal,"
Yeah,
and
I think that's great. Just not taking yourself too seriously
yeah.
and not being afraid to have a bit of fun with it.
For sure, for sure. If you're not having fun, that's it. Game over. It's just torture for everybody. And even if it's something you're passionate about, if you are not so jazzed about what you're saying, you're not ready yet. You haven't found it yet. You got to keep digging. I don't
I think people are afraid to have a bit to have fun with it. I think they think that, oh, this is business, or this is work, this has to be,
want that.
a serious presentation. And I think they forget that, like we were talking about before, just with being human, they forget that people coming along to watch are human as well, and just wanna have some sort of, get some enjoyment out of it as well. Now, I know in your podcast, Sally, you like to ask your guests about talks that moved them, and I know this because you very kindly interviewed me on your show. And yeah, so I just wanted to ask you, what is a talk that has moved you recently?
That's a good question. I'm racking my through my file cabinet right now. I love this is not a typical talk, but oh, I can't remember his name right now. This is terrible. But
It's okay, we can put it in the
he does this Dataviz stuff, and he's like a sportscaster with data. And he, oh my gosh, I don't remember where he's from. You know what? I'll send it to you. But he's this like super energetic German guy. And he's like, this is somebody who takes this boring concept, and he's looking at health, like lifespan in worldwide, all kinds of countries, looking at all kinds of data about birth rates and death rates and all kinds of information, and looking at what that has to do with the health of the countries. And so it's really boring, boring stuff. And what he did is turned it into this moving show of how data has moved and changed over the years. And he, as a speaker, like treated it like a football game or something. I mean, he was just like, "And over here, the US of A is a la la la." It was just so delightful and completely different than you've ever seen any talk on data before. And I love, like, I think of that talk a lot because it was so delightfully different. I recently, the TED Prize winner who StoryCorps, if you've seen that talk will just like rip your heart out and make you cry in the
No, I haven't seen it. Story core.
StoryCorps, CORP.
Okay.
And there, StoryCorps is an organization. I think they're based here in the United States, and they set up stations all over the country where you can just walk in and with another person and tell each other a story. And so all these really beautiful, revealing moments happen between people, and like complete, this is about the deep moments in our relationships that are so, so intimate that aren't often public. And they're captured, and they're using them as recorded history of our world and our lives and what's going on in people's worlds. And it's so cool. And so they take these recorded conversations, these stories, and they have them on their website and share them. And they're on Facebook. And that is a wonderful, every day I hear that, I'm just like, oh my gosh, that moved me. That was beautiful. And then, just recently, this past week, Barack Obama, speaking at a funeral for one of the pastors who was shot. in Charleston, South Carolina. Did you hear about this?
I did hear, I actually did hear an extract of his speech. I didn't hear the whole thing though.
Yeah. So, you know, really, I haven't seen him. You know, I've always been a big fan of Barack Obama's, like back in, gosh, 90, I don't know, when was it? 2004, I think, when he gave his first convention speech. And I was like, that guy is going to be president. That was awesome. I was so jazzed about it. And then, and jazzed when he became president. And then I was kind of like, wah, wah, because he became president guy, you know, and he was really, he wasn't trying to move his audience. I don't think, I think he was just trying to play it safe and just get through. And that is really the downside.
Perform his presidential duties.
Yes, exactly. But this week, I just feel like he threw that out the window and he was, and he just was done with it. And so there was lots of moments in that speech where I was like, okay, you're back. Hello. It's good to see you again. Barack Obama, not necessarily President Obama, but you know, he was just being more authentic.
He fired his speechwriter.
Yeah,
for the day.
Yeah. So it took me a while. I had to really think about it, and then I got on a roll. I can think of a few more actually, but.
And then after this interview, you'll probably think of a dozen more and go, "Oh, why didn't I say that one?
Should have said this."
That's how it always works. Yeah. It's like with Toastmasters when you do the impromptu talks, you get up and you mumble your way through it, and then at the end you go, why didn't I talk about this? What about this? And I could have talked about this and this and this. It just comes to you afterwards.
So
anyway, such is life.
Have you enjoyed Toastmasters? Do you?
It's fun. It's really fun. I'm giving my first speech next week, actually.
Okay.
Well, this coming Monday. And I think I'll talk about my busking experience.
Totally.
Because I told them about it a while ago, so I think they'll appreciate the update. So I've got to come up with my origin story for that.
I love it. And, good.
That's awesome. And do that. Oh, Sally, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you today. I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with me today on my podcast.
I'm delighted.
When's
asked me? Really, I am.
when's the second season of your podcast going to start?
Season 2 will start September 2015. So excellent. I don't know when you'll publish this, but I'll be kicking back into high gear September 2015. So come find me on thismovedme.com and it's on iTunes. Awesome. And all that stuff.
And in the meantime, there's plenty of episodes there from season 1 for people to check out, including our little chat where we're talking about creativity and fun things.
I loved it. It was such a fun conversation. And so, yeah, you can go find Christina on This Moved Me Too.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much, Sally.
Yeah, you bet. We'll talk soon.
Thanks again to the lovely and generous Sally Coring-Zimney for joining me on the show this week. I will pop links to all the speeches she mentioned in the show notes at thecmethod.com/Sally. Now, like I mentioned in the interview, I did in fact go to Toastmasters this week and I delivered my very first prepared speech. If you've not heard of Toastmasters or you know about it and you've never been to a meeting, make sure that you tune in next week as I will be sharing with you why I'm so excited about Toastmasters, what goes on in a Toastmasters meeting, and I may just play my first speech for you. So that's coming up in the next episode of this series on public speaking. And that wraps up episode 17. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. The fact that you're listening really means a lot to me. I cannot wait to hang out next week. Oh, and before I forget, the ukulele song you've been hearing during this episode has been me playing Somewhere Over the Rainbow on the ukulele, of course. So until next week, keep on being awesome. My name is Christina Canters, and this has been Stand Out, Get Noticed.